Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Enger, today with my fabulous co-host.
Hey, guys. This is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro.
So today we're doing a recap of the weekend. It was a crazy weekend. We had a lot going on. So there were a lot of first-time things happening. One of which that we'll be diving into is just international coaching and what that looks like overseas if you are going to compete. Some other things that we're going to talk about that were kind of relevant to the weekend are just kind of the differences, what we're seeing on a national stage and a regional stage for wellness in bikini, and kind of what's right for you when you're considering which one to go for. And various other things. We had a lot of athletes in peak week, so we'll talk briefly about some front loads and back loads. I know we had a whole podcast regarding this, but we're just going to kind of talk about some nuances there. And anything else that I miss on our list, we can kind of go through as we roll through some of these topics. What do you want to start with, Chris, and how was your last 7 days?
Last 7 days were great. I feel like a brand new person being in a routine, finally in one place, and just getting settled, getting things accomplished before we travel again for Christmas to visit family. But it's been really good to kind of reflect and kind of set some personal goals or start thinking about personal goals that I want to set for myself as an athlete in the new year. Talk through some goals with my clients setting in the new year. So I'm very excited, and I'm just kind of taking it one day at a time. My weekend and week was very even keel compared to all the excitement you experienced. So what has been going on with you?
Yeah, so real quick before we move on to that, you had mentioned the new goals for the new year. So I just didn't want to forget to say something about this, because we just came up with a bikini challenge for January.
Yes.
And so signups are, gosh, my voice just cracked. Sound like a 13-year-old boy. Signups are going to start this week, and I will be putting links for the sign up for that. It's open to current and new, any kind of people that just want to try us out for a month. It's a good opportunity to do that. So, and then for current clients, it will be the whole month of January. We're going to do a challenge, and we'll announce like awards and prizes and things like that. But basically, you know, it'll be a 4-week program, and you'll get, you know, if you're not a current client, you could get a taste of what it's like to train as a glam girl athlete. If you've ever wanted to know what it's like to train for a bikini athlete, you'll have personalized workouts, nutrition, all that stuff, adjustments, check-ins, and calls weekly if you so choose. Is there anything I missed on that before we move on?
No, I don't think so. I think if you're looking for just something to get started in a healthy manner, or I think you hit the nail on the head, it's a really good opportunity if you've thought about competing but you're not sure what it entails or if it's something that would fit your lifestyle. I think it's a great opportunity, plus you get the benefit of having a transformation, camaraderie with other people, and then you know, just kind of a new experience to start off the new year.
Yeah, and normally, if you know and you've researched us before, we only have 4-month, 6-month, and a year packages, because we feel like, you know, the prep life is year round. Those packages are paid up in full. This is a chance to just sample it for a month without committing to 4 months to see if you like it, if you're on the fence. And I know that I've done these before we started Glam Girl in the past with clients, and I feel like once they kind of get the bug and they see that, you know, it's not that unrealistic, or once they see like the changes in their body can happen, it just builds that confidence, and then they get kind of hooked and want to actually step on stage. So
yeah, it'll be exciting.
Yeah. Okay, so Yeah, there was a lot that went on this past weekend. So I just got back from Phoenix. So my last 7 days, I left on Thursday, and we had an international competitor competing in France, and it was Coach Christie's first client, and it was our first client that stepped on stage internationally here at Glam Girl. So that was pretty exciting. And we had a wellness competitor for the first time that she had long been bikini, and so she dipped her toes in wellness and did very well. She won her open and novice classes. And then on Sunday we had Masters USAs, and that was with our Masters 35 competitor. It was her first national experience. So a lot of things that I kind of like observed over the weekend, new experiences. We're going to kind of talk about some of the nuances that are going on in the competition world and just kind of recap the weekend with some of those topics that could, relate to you as listeners. Okay, so the first one I want to talk about is posing that I saw this weekend. So I just want to make sure everybody knows that if you, so at Glam Girl, we pose our athletes at least at the minimum 10 weeks out. They get, their 30 minutes. We're going to start offering posing classes next year, which is a new and exciting thing that we have coming up in 2022, where you can take a class and be with other competitors virtually online to connect with camaraderie and then learn new things. So the thing about posing is it's just like your diet, it's just like your workouts. It's not a one size fits all. Your frame and your structure are totally different than the next person, and you're a unique individual. So we want our unicorns to have that unique unicorn prep experience where they get a tailored, customized posing routine as well. And some things that I noticed is that I think people not knowing maybe coming into the sport, they will watch like the pros and see their routines. And one of the things I noticed is one of the athletes, she did basically a pro routine, an IFBB routine where she walked to the back curtain, walked back, and Sandy just kept saying, "Thank you, thank you." Like, you may exit the stage. And I mean, she got kind of like cut off from her routine. And it's just really important to know, first of all, that there's two mandatory poses, front and back. Your posing routine, especially if it's a big national show, they're gonna get you off there in like 8 to 10 seconds. That's the max. And pros can go for 90 seconds, but they earned it, they earned that right. So that's my rant about posing. What, anything to add there?
I think posing is just the most neglected of the prep steps, I would guess I would say. And I think there's people who like rush through their routines because they're nervous, and then there's people that spend so much time up there. So I think just that's why it's not just like the positions that you're in, but it's the cadence, the timing. Definitely don't just if you're serious about competing, then I would do your research seriously and then hire someone to kind of help guide you so that you have a good first experience getting up on stage.
Yeah, and I mean, if you listen to the episode where we interviewed Jazzy, it starts with the foundation, the fundamentals, and then you can get into like the styling and the facial expressions and what you're doing with other things. But it's really important that you get your transitions that are best for your body angles. So,
Correct. Yeah.
yeah. Okay.
But yeah, no. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, yeah.
I was just gonna say, and also like the longer you're up there, the judges are. I mean, I've heard Kim Seeley talk about. She's a judge and posing coach. She talks about like they're looking for flaws. The judges are looking for flaws. So your job is to show your physique with the most minimal imperfections. So sometimes the longer that you're up there on stage, the more chances you have to show off those imperfections. So making sure it's just zipped up real nice and tight, and that you show your poses and then exit off stage. So that was the last thing I just wanted to add about the posing.
Yeah, definitely. Just keep it simple.
Yes.
Okay. So I know we've had these problems with tanning in the past, but I did want to mention, just so that people are aware, I was actually talking to one of the product producers, over the weekend, and one thing I've noticed over the years is that a certain type of tanning products, I'm not throwing anybody under the bus, so I'm not going to mention company names, but they'll change colors when a athlete is on their period. And this is just from years of experience that I've noticed that like that athlete turns green. Their pH changes because of the hormones, and
Yes.
it's happened every time with this one particular product. So, fortunately, when this did happen this weekend, we were able to get the tanning people to buff out the muddiness and the green. And it was kind of like they were just using an eraser. They weren't really putting anything on it, just using the pad to buff off the green. And then it came back at the night show, and we had to do another buff. But yeah, it just happened to be like that this athlete, it was her time of the month. So that's what happens. I know you've probably had some athletes that have had that same experience. Do you care to share any
Yes.
insights there?
Yeah. Yeah, I've had an athlete that turned green as well, and the tanners just told her to stay as cool as possible, because the heat would actually activate the color to change as well. So that's, I think, important too, that you're staying in the hotel, host hotel, if that's where the tanning is, so you don't have to worry about the elements outside. Like rain getting on your tan or heat activating color differences. And again, mo like we've had tans that withstood like all kinds of different things and have looked fantastic. And then other ones that are just a little bit more sensitive. And I have noticed for with my own physique, based off of like hormonal changes, my tan will adhere as well. And I struggle with like that muddying look and have to go get like Amy said, get that eraser to kind of like buff it out and make it even. So just keep an eye on it and make sure you communicate with the tanning company. Make sure you do your pre-tan work as well too to prepare your skin, but don't panic. But yeah, I would just be smart about how you're preparing for that aspect as well.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes it's a factor of the tanners, they're supposed to spray like a pH balancer on you, let it set, and then spray you, but things can get like rushed. And so sometimes like they don't allow the pH to balancer to do its work. Sometimes it's like the athlete's skin preparation, or they've waxed, or they've used deodorant. So
Yes.
there's a multitude of reasons why a tan can turn green. But I will say that, and I'm not just shamelessly plugging the company because we, are a sponsored team by them, but I would say that Pro Tan, I really haven't seen the green or the muddiness with it.
Yes.
It's a very superior product in my opinion. And yeah, I mean, again, I'm not trying to be like biased, but I will say that that's one that I have not had that experience with.
Yeah, that would be my favorite tanning product if I had to choose.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on, let's kind of talk about the differences between front load and back load. So I know we had a podcast regarding this, but I just wanted to kind of share some of the things that I've noticed in the past week with athletes being in peak week. For example, I had a very mesomorphic female. So if you know the body types, that's the more muscular. They tend to be, they maintain pretty optimal composition year round and can grow muscles pretty easily. We were able to do a front load on that athlete, and she did her 3 days of depletion on her travel day in the air. I remember her explaining to her mom, she was eating the equivalent of like 9 bagels. Even though she wasn't eating the bagels, she was doing like rice cakes and, peak week type of carbs. But she had to consume 414 carbs and fit people problems. She was like, I feel like I was gonna like puke all my food up. But But yeah, I mean, she came out nice and full, and then we had another like more ectomorphic client where she did like 300 or something like that on her front load, and you know, we just had to keep giving her more carbs and fats like as we were leading into the show. And then if you're like more of a weight loss journey coming into the show and you have a lot of weight loss, then the backloading is a really good way to utilize that peak week. And so I had an athlete that you know, she had lost weight going into the show, and she had lost 25 pounds, and we depleted her all week for peak week, and then we did her carb up on Friday, and the next morning she was like, "How is this possible? I just lost 4 pounds and my waist is smaller." So just know that there's so many different ways to peak, and there's so many different ways that everybody is just not a one size fits all.
Yes.
So it's just so crazy to me how like the human body, you know, between endomorphic, ectomorphic, mesomorphic, how they respond to depletion and the supercompensation that happens when you do the carb load, how the muscles just suck it up and the body tightens and, you know, cortisol drops. It's unbelievable. So
Yeah. That's great. Would you say that those carb the ways of carb loading are also contingent on their like adherence to their prep beforehand? Like, do you make modifications for a different body type if they're not executing their plan as efficiently?
yeah, absolutely. And also hormones can play a part too, but
That's true.
I mean, I had two that were like kind of premenstrual during their peak week, and it was like it didn't really affect, but and I'm only sharing this because the athlete told me that I could. I was allowed to, but actually the one that had the 400 grams of carbs, she actually had COVID. She had quarantined for 14 days and all of that, but she had COVID, so she had a lot of inflammation. So it was actually one of those things where, you know, she had to be at home, she had to do home workouts, we had to do a lot of baths just to keep inflammation down. But once she started feeling better, we were able to still do a pretty significant carb load. We were pretty lucky on that, because she really. Nutrition, my point in saying this is that nutrition's king, because she really was so gassed. She couldn't do cardio, she couldn't get steps in. She just was very low energy. She had the new variant or whatever, and yeah, I mean, her workouts were really limited, so we just had to really focus on nutrition. But yeah, I was still able to do like a pretty big carb up because she, you know, she was adherent throughout. So I do find that,
That's
you know,
great.
if things get off track, we usually have to do the backload, you know, and deplete the full week. So, is that kind of what you do and you're thinking?
Yeah, that was my question is because I feel like the so I really like modifying people's loads based off of like their body type because I do think it's kind of some insight into how they will fill out really nicely or how they're I mean and it is like a weird phenomenon when it happens when you just give somebody like tons of carbs and then all of a sudden they pop but I feel like so many moving parts, and that's why I like that there's regular check-ins every couple days because you're right, like with hormones, with sickness, with travel, and then I feel like how conditioned someone is, all of that plays a huge role in how to manipulate the nutrition. So, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so another thing that kind of came up this weekend is just kind of the wellness bikini debate. So, like, where does somebody land when it comes into that? So, you probably heard me talk about figure. Think of a martini glass, right? They have the big shoulders and back lat spread, and then they literally look like a martini glass. And then, you know, we talk about the hourglass or the X frame and bikini. And so my new phrase is the bell. For wellness, just because if you think about a bell, like the top's narrow, like where you hold with your hand, and then the bottom half's like wider, like the shape of a bell. So it's the only non-symmetrical category in bodybuilding. And just some of the differences that I'm noticing with trends is, it's interesting because I've seen at the national level. So this weekend on Sunday, I saw the national level competitors that were all masters in wellness. And I don't know if it's because they are seasoned like bikini competitors, like crossing over back, you know, feeling like wellness is a better fit for them. But I'm noticing, you know, they still have like bigger quads than the bikini competitors, but, and they still have the V taper in the glutes. It's just their legs are a little bit larger and they're kind of like shaped like a bell. And then you look at the, you know, some of these regional competitions and the open classes, and it's just like, I mean, I think Coach Drea calls it the horse butt, where it's just like out of control. So, right now, I think judges are just trying to get like a handle on what is, you know, the standard, and you can only judge what shows up. So I've noticed even at regional competitions, like in the Midwest, to me, like a lot of the wellness people look almost like a bikini competitor, the ones that are winning overalls. And then you'll look at like Texas or Florida, and then you see like these huge legs that are just massive. And I've noticed there's like not many tall girls right now in wellness. Like it's a lot of shorter, stacked girls because they have those shorter muscle bellies. But what are your observations when it comes to wellness and bikini?
So I feel like the wellness division has made bikini more defined. Like we know more because it's has like a direct correlation of what it's supposed to look like. So I feel more confident knowing what judges are looking for in the bikini category. I would agree. I think wellness is kind of all over. I mean, there's definitely some like key things that make a wellness competitor in that category, like you said, with their shape type. But I have noticed big differences in different regions, what gets awarded for that category. And I mean, I feel like the easiest thing is to look at the Olympia and look at who, like Francesca, I think she's the one that won the wellness. Is that correct?
Is it Francelia or Francesca?
Oh, Francelia. Yes,
Okay.
that's her. So,
Franciela, I think is how to say it. It looks like Francesca, but yeah, I think it's Brazilian. It's like a Franciela.
Yes, yeah, no, I think you're totally on point with that. So like she had volume in her quads, she had volume, crazy volume in her glutes. And then kind of like, but her conditioning was like very on point, like it was bikini conditioning. So I think that she really embodied the wellness category. I mean, obviously that's why she won. But then some of the other girls had the size, but not the right, the not the tightness of the conditioning. So I think that's it's continuing to evolve, but I just say like it will even out, like how bikini kind of needed like a little bit of time to figure out where it fit, and it morphed along with some other categories. Just I
Oh,
say
totally.
just
You look at the winners of, you know, the first winners of bikini, it's like their bodies look so different. I mean, that would not be awarded even at a regional show. Some of the
Yeah,
best
it's crazy.
Olympias in bikini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like the new ones are going to continue to transform. So just watching the trends and training for the criteria that fits wellness. And then I think if you're like borderline and you're not quite sure, it doesn't hurt to do a crossover at a regional show and just get feedback from the judges on how like where your body type might fit better and where you want to improve. I've just found like that's the easiest thing to kind of move forward when girls are like straddling the line there.
Yeah, definitely. So this might be a whole podcast topic in itself, but just kind of switching directions, I wanted to briefly talk about the international coaching. So, you know, as the borders are opening up and like closing and things are kind of up in the air, I know that international travel is kind of spotty, when it comes to like the rules of vaccination quarantine. Every, country is different. But I'm noticing, so when I first competed internationally in San Marino, which is like a little province there in Italy, that was the first year that the NPC Worldwide came out. They announced it at that show, and I believe that was 2018, if I'm not mistaken, in the around Thanksgiving. And they, at that time, were also transitioning with the IFBB Pro League. And so at the time, they were just trying to get more opportunities for international people to get their pro status. And so they made a lot of Olympia amateurs that are just pro qualifiers. Pro qualifiers are like the Arnold and the Olympia here, amateur in the States, where you don't have to be, well, now you do, you have to be NPC affiliated, but before it, you could be whatever affiliation. And then you didn't have to be qualified. You could just show up, compete, win your pro card if you got the overall. And now, now that the NPC is getting more established in the other countries, now they're having regional shows in that country. So much like the US, how we have a regional show that you have to qualify for nationals, that's basically what our client Pia did in France. She had a regional show this past weekend, and then that basically qualified her for nationals overseas. So, for example, they have a nationals in France this coming weekend. So she would be qualified for that, essentially. And I know that you've kind of done some research with things in Canada and all that.
So for Canadian clients, I don't remember the president's name. So their affiliation, the Canadian Physique Alliance, they just require someone to do at least one Canadian regional show before they are allowed into the United States to compete at the shows here that allow for international clients. And that was my research that I did at the beginning of the year on that one. So that's what I'm aware of.
Yeah. And I mean, I traveled to Spain. I did the Alicante Amateur Olympia. It's you just make sure the word pro qualifier means that you do not have to be qualified in order to win your pro card. So if it doesn't have pro qualifier next to it, then that means that you, if it's just a national show like the one coming up here, NPC Nationals, here in December, that one you have to qualify for. Right now it's top five at a regional, national qualifier. You have to get top five in an open class. Next year it's going to change, and you're going to have to get top two in the open class in order to compete in those.
That's important to strategize. Good call.
So, the ones that are easier to be a part of, like the Arnold, it's open worldwide. It's open to all competitors. No one has to qualify for it. Same with the amateur Olympias. Their odds of winning a pro status are really hard. So if you can get your regional qualification and then go to a national show in which the pro card winners are a pro card winner per height class, or, if you're talking Universe or NPC Nationals or USAs, the top two in that height class can get it. So, this past weekend with Masters USAs, and this has evolved since I did the inaugural year in 2019, and then I competed in it last year in 2020. And every year they've added new age groups, and then they've added more letters to it. So, when I say that, like the first year they only had 35, and then the following year, or no, they had 35 and 40, and then the following year they added 45 and 50. But 45, I think, had I don't want to be misquoted, but probably like A through D, and then I think 50 only had A and B, or maybe A through D. And then this year I saw that they had enough competitors where 50 had A through H. And so you had to not only win your class A through H, but then you had to win the overall to win the 50 pro card. And then the same with 45, 40, and 35. So there were four pro cards handed out in Bikini. This past weekend in each of those, so you'd have to win your class A through H and then win the overall. So just to kind of like educate people, I mean, things keep changing, so
Yes.
this is kind of like an update podcast. I even
Yes.
learned new things about the show just this weekend, and like I said, I've competed in that show the only 2 other years that it was in existence, and just this year they've already been adding more opportunities for pro cards for masters, which is nice. So
Yeah. And I remember when I was getting my makeup done in 2018 at North Americans, talking to a Canadian client, and she was telling me that like winning her pro card, the chances, like you said, were so hard because it was a lot of like an overall win. And she took the opportunity to come to North Americans because this allows, you know, North America to compete. And she was like really hoping that with the better odds that she could like you know, achieve her pro card status. So yeah, there's a lot. I think all the like how to get there and the different shows and how to qualify, it's just important to keep up with those updates. And Amy, you always do such a great job with keeping up with the trend. I feel like you're like bikini news.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I just because like a lot of these things, like I'm either there coaching or I'm doing it as an athlete. So, like you were saying, I competed the next year at North Americans in 2019, and so I had competed in North Americans like for a long time, ever since I was a masters competitor, and it was only open to Mexico and Canada. But
Oh,
then in
yes.
2019, it blew up because it was then they allowed everyone around the world. So that's the only one that international amateurs, as a masters competitor, it's the only show you can win your pro card in your height class in existence is North
Wow.
Americans. So, yeah, I remember that year the top five were from all from different countries because everybody was like, oh my gosh, finally, like a show that as a master's competitor, I can win my pro card if I'm not from the US in my height
Yes.
class with my age
Yes.
group. So, yes. Okay.
Yeah, you do all the strategizing. You're good at that.
All right. Well, I don't think I have anything other. I mean, I think I kind of went through all the bullet points. We're definitely at the 30-minute mark. We're past it. So, I appreciate everybody listening. Did you have anything to add before you hopped off?
No, I think this was a good way to end it.
Okay. Well, if you are interested in the bikini challenge and you want to get more information about that, you can find us on Instagram at Glam Girl Bikini or at Prep Life Podcast, and we will have the sign up link most likely in the show notes here today, or you can find it on the website as well. And if you would like to apply for the team, that would be the place to go is glamgirlbikini.com and hit the get started button to apply. And if you are interested in dipping your toes for the January, let us know. If you would be so kind to leave a rating or review, it just helps out the podcast. We are an ad-free podcast, and anytime you share it on your story with somebody or you leave a rating or review, it just gets more exposure to other people that maybe are interested in the same topic. So we do appreciate that. And this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini signing off with my fabulous co-host.
And this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro. Thanks for listening, guys.